Transfiguration Sunday. Did you get all your Transfiguration presents bought? Did you send out your Transfiguration cards? Cook your special Transfiguration meal? All those things? Probably not. It's a festival in our church. Excuse me. But it's kind of a strange day in the life of the church and the story of our faith. Every year, Pastor Paul and I kind of joke about who's going to preach on Transfiguration Sunday, who's going to get stuck with it. And you can tell it's so bad because he actually left the country so that he didn't have to preach on Transfiguration Sunday. So he wins this time. No, we just kind of joke about it because it's such a wacky story. And it's like hard to know sometimes what to say about it. So what does it mean for us? What is this story all about? We join Jesus as he picks just three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, and leads them up a high mountain. If you were here last week, you heard the story about when Jesus had healed Simon's mother-in-law, and then he went off to the mountain to pray. Mountains are a place where Jesus connects with God. He shows us, again, how important it is to take that time away to be with God. Jesus has just told his disciples in the Gospel of Mark that he is going to be killed, that he is going to suffer, and that anybody who is serious about following him must be willing to let go of their life as they know it. It's pretty heavy stuff. So they get up this mountain, and Jesus is transfigured down to his clothes, and he dazzles like no earthly thing could. I think I missed an opportunity to show that Super Bowl Tide commercial again about the white clothes. But the point is that Jesus is changed. There's something about him that's different. The Greek word used is metamorphosis, right? Which when we think of that word, we usually think of a butterfly, something that has gone through a complete change. So what happens next is that Elijah and Moses appear, Old Testament prophets who are very important, and they talk with Jesus, and we don't know what they talk about. But Peter witnesses this, and he's, I guess, trying to be helpful, but he ends up being socially awkward, and he suggests that they build a shelter and just stay there forever. He says, "It is good, Lord, for us to be here." In this strange scene that he's seeing, there was something that was drawing him in, calling him to want to stay there forever. Then a cloud rolls in, and the voice of God booms for the second time in Mark's gospel. The first was at Jesus' baptism. And the voice says, "This is my son, the beloved." They had heard those words before, but this time he adds something. He says, "Listen to him." And then, in the blink of an eye, it's all gone. The dazzling brightness, Elijah and Moses, and the cloud. The extraordinary is replaced by the ordinary scene. But I'm sure that place would never feel the same to them again. And to make it even stranger, Jesus literally orders them not to tell anybody about this until after he is gone and raised from the dead. Who would even believe them now if they came down the mountain and told people about what they had seen? But it's even harder to imagine who would believe them then, later on, about this story. Because it's pretty unbelievable. Unbelievable, extraordinary, out of this world. Those are words that we often use to describe things that are amazing, whether it's experiences, places, food, or people. They're positive words. This experience of transfiguration is unbelievable, extraordinary, and definitely out of this world, but in a good way. But it's also unbelievable, extraordinary, and out of this world because it's kind of hard to believe. It seems completely detached from the ordinary, from reality, And it sounds kind of similar to somebody describing an alien visitation or a UFO sighting. How are we supposed to believe this? What are we to take from it? How do we not sound like wackos when we say we believe in a God who comes in dazzling otherworldliness, who magically appears and disappears in a cloud, who both takes up prophets from earth and sends them back down? I feel a bond with Peter over the social awkwardness of this situation. When I hear the story of the Transfiguration, I am reminded of the limits of my own understanding. Sometimes I can feel like I have a pretty good grasp on God. I can do things like exegesis and translation. I know what words like consubstantiation mean. I know, I'm pretty amazing, but but stories like the Transfiguration remind me that I, kind of like Jon Snow on Game of Thrones, know nothing. God has given us a lot to go on, right? We have this Bible which contains tons of stories about God's interaction with us in our world. But there's still a lot that we don't know and can't understand, right? There's still a lot of things we wish that God would give us clear answers to. But we know God is real not just because of those stories, but because of our own experiences of our faith, through our prayers, and through our own personal connections with God. If you've ever had an experience of faith you can't explain, you know that somehow your life is never the same again. Sure, you go back to your normal day-to-day life, but there's a part of you that's changed. If you've heard that still small voice of God in your mind, you can never unhear it. If you've felt that wave of love that is God's real presence wash over you, even if just for a moment, you know that you are changed. Maybe even you would say transfigured. There aren't necessarily words to explain these experiences, and trying to explain them somehow feels wrong. But you know it was real, and you will never be the same. Do you remember math homework when you were growing up? Sorry to bring it up. I've tried to block it out myself. But do you remember those kinds of problems where you had to show your work? It wasn't just enough to get the right answer. You had to show how you got it. These kinds of problems were like a double blow for people like me. Because it wasn't just enough to like try my best and hope I got the right answer. I had to show that I really knew what I was doing, and I didn't. Our world operates on this principle more often than not. It's not enough to just believe in God. We have to show proof of our faith. If we are a Christian, we need to show that we are loving, forgiving, gentle, perfect at all times. Have you ever heard someone say, or have you ever said, and they're a Christian, right? They did this, but they call themselves a Christian. If God is real, we need to be able to convince those we are telling about God that we are right. We need to lay it all out in a logical, easily followable way. But if we're honest, that's hard to do for ourselves sometimes. Much less in a way that somebody else can understand. Because faith doesn't really work that way. God isn't easily provable or explainable. But does God need to be? What if we stopped trying to explain ourselves to others and spent more time reflecting on our own indescribable experience of God? What if we admitted to ourselves that the truest things in faith have no real explanation? What if we lived in the mystery of faith? Lent always follows Transfiguration Sunday. On Wednesday, we'll gather here again, and you'll come forward to be reminded that you have been formed from the dust of the earth by God, and to remember that you will again return to dust one day. We'll follow Jesus through the desert, into Jerusalem, and to the cross. And finally, we'll see death transformed into life, and we'll be invited to believe that crazy story as well. It's hard for me to explain all this sometimes, and I have a degree. But stories like Transfiguration and Resurrection remind me that I don't have to have all the answers. I just have to keep listening to the one who does. This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. We don't have all the answers, but we know who does. And when I really listen to the voice of Jesus, the voice of God in him, I am transformed. When I turn my focus from the world's voice to the voice of God, I am different. I am not dazzlingly bright, but I am brighter. I am lighter, and I am closer to that place where I know I want to live and I want to stay. A place that I don't always understand or like or agree with, but a place where I am changed for the better. So my question for us now as we take some time to reflect and pray is, can we live in the mystery of our faith? And are we willing to be transformed by the words that Jesus says? So take a quiet moment of reflection and prayer to pray to God to help you live in those times of mystery and to hear that voice of Jesus calling you wherever it is that you need to be. Amen.